four people, you know, absolutely ridicule me and say I'm a big Jesse, I'm a big... I don't mind, I don't, honestly do not mind if that's what you think, but all I know is...
Ladies and gentlemen, it is Lockdown Lore Episode 3, and on this episode we talk about George Bloody Mackenzie, the poltergeist in Greyfriars Kirkyard in Edinburgh. This week we're joined by the City of the Dead Tour's manager himself, James Kirstorfin, and he's going to tell us a little bit about his tours, what he's experienced while he's there, and basically a little bit about the unknown, the undead, or the dead, you decide. So on this episode, as always, we have J-Mac
here. And that was a great conversation that we had with James, or Jamie. I kept calling him Jamie. If it was James, I'm really sorry. I was 100% sure it was James. But we had a good conversation. And obviously, we've got our third member of the Jibber Jabber podcast team here tonight. We've got Todd. How are you doing, Todd boy?
I'm doing well, guys. Thank you again for having me on your podcast. I really enjoy listening to yous on podcast, even though yous are like two of my mates. So it's just good to actually be here live with you as well, because I feel like I'm live with you most of the time when I'm listening to you.
Oh, that's good. So, nice. You don't really like the paranormal. As much as you're intrigued by the paranormal, you're actually, of all my friends, of all the people I know, you're the only guy that I know if I took into a tomb, you'd shite your pants and run out, and then, why did you take me in there? So, before we get the story of George the Bloody Mackenzie, tell the audience a little bit about why you clearly believe in the paranormal, but why it proper scares you to your soul.
Well, maybe it's just horses for courses, maybe it's just me. So before people, you know, absolutely ridicule me and say I'm a big Jesse, I'm a big pussy, you know, it's fine. I honestly do not mind if that's what you think. But all I know is that in these places, I believe that, I'm not going to go into my theories on what I think it is or what I think causes it, but what I'm 100% sure of is that there is something going on, and I think to deny it is ignorant, completely ignorant. And it's like you say, it's like we'll talk about in the interview, it's human instinct that I'm just intrigued to know more, and I'm absolutely fascinated by the nature of paranormal stuff, but having experienced it very lightly, I certainly have not experienced the things that this man we're speaking to tonight has experienced, not even close, but I have experienced enough to know that this stuff, at least, you know, I'm confident that it is real, it is there, but I have never had a situation where I felt easy with it, I felt comfortable and I thought, oh, that's good, that's comforting. No, it's always sinister, it's always, that shouldn't be, this should not be, it puts my hair on edge, I'd never sit comfortable with it. I could go back to the earliest experience I remember, my grandparents' house. I have two sets of grandparents, like I suppose everybody has, but the grandparents in question live down south. Mum's originally from England, down south, and my gran and granddad stay in a house that's been there for years and years, and they swear there's nothing wrong with it. They're like, oh, I don't know what's going on about, but I remember the first time I stayed down there without my brother, because me and my brother used to have to stay in the same rooms, and I think it was always, I'm okay when I'm with somebody else, but when I'm by myself, that's when shit goes down, and I think that's the key. I think a lot of time these things happen, at least to me, when I'm by myself, and that's what makes it more difficult to prove to people. But I had an experience where I woke up in the middle of the night with the bed shaking inexplicably, and that totally freaked me the fuck out. And nobody believed me about it. And I was like, you fucking assholes. I had a coin chucked at my head in my house when I was watching. This is so weird because this is the probably... I'm going to list it off as quick as I can because it's a lot. I don't want to take off all day. I was watching Ray, the Ray Charles movie with Jamie Foxx on Sky Movies when it first came out.
Creepy as fuck, that movie.
Terrifying. I was watching that movie. I remember specifically it was that movie, and I was sitting on the couch here, the television was in front of me, and out of no fucking nowhere, a coin hit the television, and there was nobody else in the room but me. And the weirdest thing is, at the time, I thought to myself, I didn't get a fright or anything, I thought, who the fuck's just fucked a coin at the telly? And my brother was upstairs playing fucking PlayStation. It was just me and him in the house. And I was like, do you chuck a coin at a telly? He goes, nah, why the fuck are you? And I was like, okay, that was weird. So I've always came back to that. I was like, that's weird. But I've been uncomfortable in places. My mum and dad tell me about they've taken me to houses when I was a young boy and I've screamed the place down. And they never took me back, that type of thing. But up until I got married, I was always like, yeah, I feel uncomfortable in places. I've not really seen anything that really makes me completely certain. But then I got married in a lovely place called Earth Castle. But
and you were like, fuck this.
the castle, right? The castle is where the honeymoon suite is, right? And when you stay there, you've got a choice to stay either in the castle itself, which is the original grounds, or you stay in the complex where everybody else stayed, which is all newly built and is, in my opinion, absolutely fine. I was staying in the fucking quarter of a century old fucking castle, where apparently the honeymoon suite where you stay in, it's a cracking big room and everything like that, but it's also this where a fire hack took place, where a nanny and two children died in a house, died in the fire. You remember this? We were talking about this at the time, Ken.
Yes.
And me and my wife came back after the reception, and we were getting ready for bed and things like that. And the first weird thing, we were having a conversation about whatever the day is, blah, 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 blah. And somebody came to the door, stood at the door. You know the way if you were standing in a room and then suddenly the floorboards would go as if somebody's walking down the hall and you're like, all right, cool. Went to check it. Nobody there. So, like, that's fucking weird. And this happened throughout the night. So, walking up and down the stairs, walking up the hallway, like, we're talking 3 or 4 a.m., my wife's sleeping, I'm sitting in my fucking bed, just like, this is fucking... My honeymoon night was one of the worst nights I've ever spent. I sat like that. I'm sure my wife won't mind me saying, I sat there the whole fucking night like this, just wide awake, with a telly on, just thinking to myself, please fucking go to sleep, Todd, just fall asleep, just fall asleep. And I couldn't, because I was on fucking heightened alert. People, and this thing's walking up and down the hallway, and then it starts. Then the children noises start.
Fuck off. Did that actually... Oh, fuck off. You never...
Fuck off.
Then the children... I'm out. Then the children...
Right, I'll see you later. Children noises fucked me up. No.
The children started walking, running down the hallway, and I thought to myself, I'm losing my fucking mind. I fell asleep because I fell asleep fucking terrified. And my wife, who doesn't believe in anything like this at all, wakes... I'm woken up by my wife going, Todd, there's children in the hallway. And I was like, fuck off. I've had enough of this place. I want out.
Really? I walked you to your room the night you went to that room, and then I walked out skipping. Like,
do you remember how fucking terrified I was? Do you remember? Yeah. Do you not remember me saying to you, I do not want to go back?
Do you remember I actually took a picture and was like, if there's a ghost in here, I'll catch it. And I photoshopped a wee boy in it.
He photoshopped a wee boy. He ripped the fish at me all weekend. But that's my experience. And it was bad enough until my wife wakes up and tells me the same thing. And then we had other people stay in the castle who were reporting the same things about that. And I was like, you know what? The hallway noises were bad enough as it was. Apparently it's got a ghost dog and all. I don't know if it was a dog or if it was some other guy. We were getting told stories by the people that worked there, but it was the children noises, and we're like, oh yeah, they're quite regular, don't worry, they're just playing.
So that actually, you actually heard those noises, and so did Kirsten. Yes. You never told me this.
Yes. No, Kirsten, mate, fuck, it's freaking awful. It was just one of the worst nights ever. I don't like to talk about it very often, because it still gives me, like, my hairs and that stand up, my arms and...
Just think about this, Todd. Just think about this.
I don't like that. It's not comfortable. It's not natural.
Here's a thought that'll make you feel better, though, right? When you and your wife finally got to sleep, those motherfuckers were staring at you. They were in your room staring at you. Just know that.
Probably.
Mate, you heard children.
Yeah. Yeah, but if you look up Earth Castle, Earth Castle's very, very, like, like really haunted. Like there's people like wedding receptions and there's things in the background and stuff like that. The place is fucked, man. Like a guy told me who worked there, he says that, oh, that happens all the time. One night I went down, I heard people as if they were having a party, and walked in, and there was a guy shouting something like, you're not going to leave me, Karen, you're not going to leave me, and walked into the hallway and stared at him, and then walked off, and he was thinking to himself, well, you're not supposed to fucking be in here, and there was nobody there. So he's claiming he actually saw somebody, talking about Karen or something like that, but I don't know how, I don't know if that's true or not, but I can tell you, I know what I heard. it couldn't have been in my imagination because I was trying everything I could to drown it out. But,
That is the creepiest thing ever, and I can't believe you never told me
the
that.
The thing is, it just, there's nothing really, people might be sitting there going, oh, it's just people running up down a fucking hallway and all that. It's not scary. No, it's not, it doesn't sound scary, but it never feels like, oh, this is fine. It's
so matter of fact, it was like, fucking hilarious.
I mean, the guy we're going to talk to is so he's cool as a cucumber about it, and that fascinates me as well. How people can just handle that. People are probably listening to this right now, going, "My God, what a massive pussy!" And I don't believe a word he says, and that's fine. Don't believe it, man. I know how I felt that night, I know, and that's why I don't like putting myself in that situation. I don't like feeling the way that I feel. I don't like, but I'm fascinated to hear other people's accounts. I'm fascinated to try and see as much as I can of it without getting involved personally myself, because I don't feel we should be experiencing these things, but nevertheless they happen. So I've rambled on enough. I think I've made my point that I'm a big shite bag. And
we're going to get into that now then. So coming up right now is the story of George Bloody Mackenzie, the poltergeist that roams Greyfriars Kirkyard. So enjoy.
My Brush with a Ghost by Tara Carman. It was the summer of 2003 and my friend Robin and I were travelling through the UK with my younger sister Shannon. We were in the notoriously haunted city of Edinburgh trying to choose a ghost tour. Our dilemma was whether to subject ourselves to an angry poltergeist who liked scratching and bruising tourists, or to check out an underground chamber full of the remains of plague victims who had been entombed alive. The latter did not appeal to me, and Robin really wanted to experience the poltergeist, so off we went. Our guide, clad head to toe in black leather with hair the colour of red Kool-Aid, led us through the narrow, cobblestone streets of the old town, telling tales of a murder here and a public execution there. We ended up at a gated-off section of Greyfriars Cemetery, with a row of small mausoleums on either side and a path down the middle. Our guide told us this section was off limits to the public, except through this tour company. He proceeded to tell us the following story. Once upon a time, in the 17th century, a group of Presbyterians called the Covenanters rose up against the crown in defence of the right to practice their religion. They lost, and about 1,200 survivors of the last battle were taken to this part of Greyfriars Cemetery, which became known as the Covenanters' Prison. There, they were either executed or died a slow death of starvation and exposure at the hands of the particularly sadistic Lord Advocate, George Mackenzie, whose violent methods earned him the nickname Bloody Mackenzie. The Covenanters who died there were buried on site. Mackenzie's own tomb is just a few steps away from the gated-off prison. All was well until 1999, when a homeless man seeking shelter from a storm found his way into Mackenzie's tomb, disturbed some remains and ran away in fear, the story goes. Shortly after, the city of Edinburgh began receiving complaints of people encountering hot spots, cold spots, and getting mysterious injuries around Mackenzie's tomb, but mostly around one particular structure in the Covenanters' prison called the Black Mausoleum. The city locked both the prison and the tomb in response, but the tour company we were with was granted permission to take people inside. The guide, who told us he received danger pay, said it was not unusual for people to pass out, throw up, or find scratches or bruises they couldn't account for while inside the Black Mausoleum. The culprit, known as the Mackenzie Poltergeist, is said to be the spirit of the infamous Sir George, aroused by the fearful energy produced on the night of the storm. The guide unlocked the gate and led us inside the Covenanter's prison. I will admit to being fairly freaked out by this point. I rationalised the feeling as a natural result of the story we had just been told. But when I saw the Black Mausoleum we were all expected to squeeze into, I had a very strong sense I should not go in. I told my sister as much, but when she pointed out the alternative was to stay in the prison yard by myself, I changed my mind. The guide stood at the entrance to the mausoleum, never quite coming inside. He told us as we filed past that we'd be safer if we stayed close together in a group. Shannon and I headed for the middle of the pack, but when I looked for Robin, he was leaning against a back wall with his arms crossed, off by himself. The guide started talking again, but I have no idea what he said. I remember a woman bursting into tears and leaving the mausoleum. I remember at one point feeling what I can best describe as a mild electric shock under my feet. I closed my eyes and silently repeated a Buddhist mantra my dad taught me when I was little and having recurring nightmares. I had no idea if it would help, but it made me feel better. Shannon was also mouthing a Wiccan chant. She later recalled feeling anxious and slightly sick. Finally, someone in a monster mask jumped into the entrance of the mausoleum, scaring the daylights out of all of us, except Robin, who didn't react at all. When we came out, Robin asked us how long we'd been in there. 10 minutes, my sister said, recalling that the guide had said the person in the mask waited exactly that long to scare us, indicating it was time to come out. Robin replied that he had no memory of anyone in a mask jumping out at us. I thought Robin was trying to scare us, so I didn't pay much attention. My main concern was getting the heck out of there. I felt like I needed a shower, but Shannon and Robin wanted to check out Mackenzie's tomb, so they peered through the metal bars while I waited a little ways away. They both stepped back in perfect unison. They had been startled by a noise, which Shannon said sounded like the snarling of an animal. I said I thought we should leave, but Robin went back to the tomb to see if he could hear the noise again. Suddenly, he jumped back, covering his ear. "Feels like my ear is on fire," he said. I suggested again that we leave. As we waited for the bus to our hostel, Robin complained that his stomach hurt. When he lifted his shirt, there were 3 distinct scratches across his stomach. He said he didn't know where they came from, but didn't have any memory of the time we were in the mausoleum. Shannon and I reasoned that he might have been nervous in there and done that to himself. Robin agreed that this was probably what had happened. At this point, I became excruciatingly aware of every itch and twinge in my body. A few minutes later, Robin said his back hurt. We checked, and there were 3 more scratches. This too, we reasoned away. Maybe Robin had somehow scratched his back while he was leaning against the wall of the mausoleum. "Yeah," Robin said, "that is probably what happened." When the bus came, Shannon and Robin sat next to each other and I sat across the aisle. Robin kept nodding off, slumping against Shannon, and then waking up with a start, as if he'd been jolted awake. When Shannon asked him why he was doing this, he said he was unaware he was doing anything. Robin can be dramatic, and it would not be out of character for him to play a joke on us, so I was not overly worried. We got back to the hostel and sat in a lounge overlooking the sea. We'd been there maybe 5 minutes when Robin jumped up suddenly, yelling in pain. "My chest!" he shouted, taking off his shirt. I think I may have screamed, and I don't really remember. I do know that my sister was a lot calmer than I was. His chest was covered in scratches, but they were strangely symmetrical and looked like some kind of pictograph. There was a larger formation in the middle that looked like a circle with a cross on the top and squiggly arrows on either side of it. There were other scratches on his upper arm and lower back that looked like marks that would be left behind by fingernails. When Shannon lightly touched his arm, it left a handprint on his skin. The only thing I could think to do was email my dad, because he was the only person I knew who had ever experienced something like this. He answered right away and said we should take Robin to hospital. He also said we should do the meditation I'd been doing in the mausoleum as a group. Shannon and Robin didn't think we needed to go to the hospital, but thought the meditation sounded like a good idea, if for no other reason than it would calm us down. The meditation requires visualising a dark crimson or rose colour, and I had a shirt in our room that was about the right shade. I took the opportunity to thoroughly check myself over for scratches. Thankfully, I was clear, but I didn't go right back to join Shannon and Robin, who were in the hostel's backyard. Instead, I went to the front desk and called my dad, who reiterated that we should take Robin to the hospital. Making the call was a spur-of-the-moment decision I had not mentioned to either of the others. Meanwhile, Robin complained to Shannon that his stomach was upset, and Shannon said he might feel better if he threw up. She walked across the yard, as Robin was sick in the bushes. When she looked back, she saw Robin rise from a kneeling position and start striding, very slowly and purposefully, towards her. Something about the way he was moving and looking at her made her back away. "It didn't look like Robin," she recalled later. She asked Robin if he was okay and saw his mouth move in response, but couldn't hear him. She asked again as he came closer, backing up until she hit the wall of the hostel, but still couldn't hear what he was saying. Robin told us later he had been fighting a strong urge to take a run at Shannon. But when he finally caught up to her, he said he was feeling better. Shannon observed that I was taking a long time to get the shirt, and Robin said I'd just got off the phone. The hostel's lobby was not visible from the backyard, and I hadn't told either of them I'd be making a call, so I don't know how Robin could have known that. I ran into them at the door of the hostel and we decided to go to a hospital. When we explained to the hostel staff, who all seemed to be Australian, why we needed to go, they thought it was hilarious. Some of them even wanted pictures of Robin's scratches, and he was only too happy to oblige. A nurse at the hospital told us to go see a priest, but it was getting late and we were tired, so we went back to the hostel. The next morning, in the cold, hard light of day, Robin seemed fine, so we got on a train bound for Inverness to look for the Loch Ness Monster. I have thought long and hard about the possible explanations for this, the most obvious being that it was all a big joke Robin played on Shannon and me. It's possible, I suppose, that he researched the poltergeist in advance, gave himself those scratches when we weren't with him, and acted out the rest. I think this is unlikely for a few reasons. For one, Robin finds it difficult to talk about this experience and did not want his last name used in the story because it remains a sensitive issue. This is not consistent with the behaviour of someone who is playing a practical joke. Secondly, this was before the age of the smartphone. I don't think we even had the mobile, and our time at internet cafes was minimal because it was so expensive, so there was not much opportunity to research. The decision to go on that particular ghost tour was spontaneous. Shannon and I were with Robin from the beginning of the tour until the time the scratches appeared. He didn't even use the restroom. If he'd done that to himself, one of us would have noticed. That, combined with the fact that many others who visit that place come out with similar injuries, makes me think there was something else at work here. Did this experience make me believe in ghosts? I don't know. On questions like this, I tend to defer to the wise words of that famous skeptic, Agent Dana Scully of the FBI. Nothing happens in contradiction to nature, only in contradiction to what we know. Was that entity the departed spirit of Sir George Mackenzie? Who knows? But I believe there is something in that mausoleum humans don't fully understand. Maybe one day we will. What I do know is if I'm ever fortunate enough to be back in Edinburgh, I will leave it well alone.
If that didn't creep you out, it fucking did for me. I'm sure J-Mac farted four times through that, man.
No, five.
Five. So, without further ado, guys, it is now time for our interview, or conversation. We'll call them conversations because it's not necessarily an interview. It's a chat with James Kirstorffen. So, joining us today on Lockdown Lore, Episode 3, we have Jamie Kirstorffen from City of the Dead Tours in Edinburgh. How are you doing?
Yes. Brilliant. Absolutely fantastic, Kevin. Thank you. You actually said my name right. I was gobsmacked. For once, somebody could actually say my surname correctly. it's quite throwing me back, actually. Well done. Congratulations.
So people get Kirstorffen wrong often.
All the time. There's different Costorfine, Costofa, Costofini,
Costofini sounds everything. Like an Italian meal.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah. Side order, yeah.
No. A main meal, man. That's not that bad. It's a main meal.
Pasta. Yeah, absolutely.
So today we're going to be talking about George Bloody Mackenzie and basically the poltergeist, or poltergeists, as I would say. Would you say poltergeist? that pretty much...
Certainly poltergeist, yeah. Singular entity, yeah.
Right, so you guys took over the Kirkyard, what, in 1999?
Yeah, I mean, we started doing tours in 1999. The tour started by Jan Andrew Henderson, the author, who was documenting the cases that were happening at the time within the locked set. Well, it wasn't locked at that time, but in that section off Greyfriars Kirkyard. The early reports of people coming away with scratches on them, you know, like they were being grabbed, things like that. So Jan decided, you know, what's the best way to document something truthfully and get a wide spectrum to get, you know, a fair answer out of this, is by taking people in there and getting them to tell us their experiences and what they felt and things like that, and kind of like guinea pigs.
Yeah. Nice. Come along, step right up. Get your ear burnt. So J-Mac, actually, the guy in the hat, he's actually been on a tour. And J-Mac, you've never actually told me this, so I'm so shocked, because we've done a few paranormal episodes before. Maybe you could tell us a bit about what actually happened on your experience.
Well, mine wasn't actually in the Greyfriars Cemetery. It was I can't remember if it was part of the same... This is where it's a bit screwed up. I can't remember if it's part of the same tour or if it was a mixture of two tours in my mind that have kind of come together because it was in the same kind of area. But I did do a tour of the Edinburgh Vaults as well. And it was when I came out at the World's End pub after that tour, I could feel like a kind of burning on the back of my neck. And I said to my wife... she wasn't my wife at the time. She was just my significant other. I said to her at the time, "I said, have I got something on my neck?" She's like, "John, you've got a big fucking scratch on the back of your neck." And I was like, "Shut up. What's on my neck?" She was like, "There's a big scratch." And then my brother was there. And she said, "Brian, does J-Mac have a big scratch on the back of his neck?" He's like, "Aye. Where the fuck did that come from?" I was like, "I have no idea." Now, I'm always... As much as I believe in ghosts, right, for no good reason whatsoever, I do believe in ghosts because I think of it as a kind of energy. Now, we all know that energy doesn't disappear. It just redistributes and it dissipates. So it doesn't, like, when you die, the energy that's in you has to go somewhere. That's why I believe in ghosts, right? But when I had this scratch in the back of my neck, and I still to this day have my doubts about it, because I look back at it and think, well, did I scratch myself and not know it? Did somebody else scratch me? Was an ex-girlfriend in the crowd that I didn't know about that had a fucking go? I've no idea. But I came out of that with a big nasty scratch on the back of my neck, and it still irks me a wee bit to this day that I don't know for sure whether it was paranormal or if it was just something normal.
So Jamie, with you being there for that long, I take it, have you yourself had any scratches or burns or any faint feelings?
Funnily enough, I've been with the company 11 years now. I'm about as psychic as a fire extinguisher. But I have seen a lot of strange, very strange things happen that I can safely say is not human orientated. Scratches being one of them. These scratches appear on people out of nowhere, you know, and they last about 12 hours and they're gone. And some people say there is this slight sensation of burning. Other people say they don't feel anything at all, you know, until suddenly somebody points it out to them or they see it themselves. I've only had unexplained scratches on me once, and that wasn't actually in the graveyard that happened in the prison. It was actually in our vaults, our underground vaults. One night I was doing maintenance overnight, and I
As you do.
I love it. I absolutely love spending time there on my own. 3 o'clock in the morning, that's when things just go deadly silent.
What's wrong with you?
I love it. Absolutely love it. It's just, I know every sound in the vaults. It's the sounds I don't recognise, you know, are the things that, I wouldn't say freak me out. In this job, you don't get freaked out. You know, it's just, it unnerves me slightly. Uh-huh. But that was that. After that, I was washing my arms down off the paint, and that's when I noticed I had two circular scratches on my forearm. Perfect circles. I had no idea how I got them. I wasn't leaning on anything. I hadn't brushed not to do a circle. So that's unexplained. But that sort of shook me. That's the one and only time that I've been interacted with, shall we say.
I mean, they must, like, the spirits themselves must be used to you and your team by now then. So I don't know, maybe they're giving you like kind of like a free pass.
Well, they're probably sick of us, to be honest with you. They must know us all the time. If I was a dead person in there, you're damn right, I'd be ripping everybody apart having a listen to that every day. Leave me alone, give me peace, man.
God, it's interesting that you said about, you know, the scratches lasting 12 hours, because we actually had someone write into us who actually lives in Australia, and this fella actually came across from Australia to visit the tour. So I'll read out what he'd wrote into us. His name is Scott Mick. Scott MC.
Yeah, that's totally his name. My name's Scott Mick. And I'm here to tell you a fucking story, right?
So,
Struve.
So he's going to be listening to this.
Struve, you fucking galah. You bloody drongo.
Right, so Scott messaged in through Instagram and said, I was on a ghost tour on the night of the 29th of November 2012. The Mackenzie poltergeist burned my right ear as I stood near the corner of the Black Mausoleum. The guide mentioned everything about burning later, confirmed that it's one of the forms of attack. Now, I said, well, that's crazy, Scott. We'll need to mention this, right? He said, no problem. He says, I said, how long did it take to heal? And his response was, no problem. It was sore and very red for the rest of the night, but was gone in the morning. I wish I had taken a photo. I went on the tour with my best mate, who is a total skeptic and a bit of a prankster, and I thought he was messing with me, blowing his breath in my ear, but I realised he was standing a good 4 or 5 feet away, and so was the rest of the group, and it just got hotter and hotter. I should have spoken up as it happened, but was a little freaked out. I spoke to the guide before we left the kirkyard. I'm from Australia. Can't wait to go back. So that just... You know, that's someone from Australia who messaged today just saying the exact same as to what you've just kind of said to us, that the burns don't last for any longer than, 12 hours, and that this guy, obviously, he's from Australia, and he visited in 2012. So it's the same kind of thing. So, you know, what's the chances of everybody being wrong that's ever visited the kirkyard? Yeah. I mean, there's something clearly sinister or semi-sinister going on with that, which kind of brings me to the point of, you know, there was a scenario, and correct me, I've heard two sources, one saying it was 2003, another says it was 2011, but a couple of yobs broke in and broke into the mausoleum, and they had taken Sir George's head. Was that 2003 or 2011?
No, it wasn't as late as 11. It was 2000, I'm sure it was around about 2004.
Right, so there you go. So 2004, so that... Were you there at that time? I take it you that before a little bit before your time.
No, that was just before. Yeah, just before my time. Yeah, but that was when the 15-year-old broke into Mackenzie's tomb and removed.
Like, I've got a news source here that basically just reads, and I'll read this part, and maybe you can.
Paper said he was simulating a sex act.
What simulating the fuck?
A sex act.
It's like, I know 15-year-olds are a bit desperate, but fuck's sake.
what it stated in the newspaper, it says the fellow's name was Devlin, broke into the tomb of the 17th century prosecutor Sir George Bloody Mackenzie in June 2003. Devlin, 17 at the time, cut the head off an unidentified corpse with a penknife, put his fist into the neck and made it talk like a glove puppet. of all things to do when you're that age, I take it when you first started, they would have kind of told you about that scenario. And do you have any?
Well, I knew about it anyway. I mean, obviously, remembering a case like that. Do you know what the best bit about that whole story is? Is he later then became a traffic warden?
It seems like
I am not joking. Yeah. He lied to get the job and he was fired, but he did become a traffic warden. Yeah.
So, what's the do you know the story about what he lied about and why he was fired?
Yeah. I just don't think he came up with his conviction. He obviously lied about that, and then you know, he's one of his workmates had seemingly Googled his name. Sonny Devlin is a very, very easy name to remember.
Right.
Sonny. And that's what came up. It was his past, so to speak.
Oh, God. Sonny Devlin. I mean, you're either going to be like a character in an Adam Sandler film or a twat.
The latter. So, I mean, think about this as well, right? So this Sonny Devlin broke into the mausoleum, and of all corpses to fuck with, it just so happened to be the most like synonymous George Bloody McKenzie. Like, what's the chances of that?
I think because that one's right at the very bottom.
Right.
That's the very first one you'll come across when you go down to the burial chamber, is George's coffin is sitting first. The other three are placed at the near the back of the sort of burial chamber beneath the McKenzie tomb.
Wow. And it is locked, that tomb, I
which
think.
Which is
it...
where people get...
They get...
It is at all times, yeah. Well, a lot of people get confused between the two. Mackenzie's mausoleum is indeed black, but the mausoleum where the attacks happen are situated within the Covenanter's prison. The black mausoleum is in the prison where the attacks happen. That is not the attack where all the attacks happen. Nobody has access to that except obviously the council.
Mm-hmm. God. So
and Sonny Devlin.
I wonder if he's ever been back. No, probably not.
They always revisit the scene of the crime, don't they?
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, that's for such a thing to happen. Do you think that's when all these attacks started happening, or was there news of that before?
No. Well, there's allegedly been reports, you know, of the strange things going on around Mackenzie's tomb, the actual one in the graveyard. You know, they're going right back to the early 1800s. You know, you had the little schoolboys running about it. There's always sinister tales about it. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, I think the first reported attacks happened around about 1998, late 1998 and early 1999. Wow. That's when things really started kicking off, really.
I know there was a stories about the homeless man, and that's kind of where it
that's
all comes
exactly
off. There is that actually a true story? Because I've read a little bit about it, but I'm thinking it goes into the stories go into a lot of detail about what this homeless guy did. But I'm thinking, well, how do they know if nobody ever seen him again?
Well, that's the thing. Yeah, there is like everything else with Edinburgh, there's a certain element of truth behind, you know, the whole myth that it ends up as. The homeless guy did indeed break into the back of Mackenzie's tomb to get shelter. Around the back of Mackenzie's tomb, there was a space that you could crawl through. It's gated off now, but you could do it. So that's how he got in. And when you walk in, there's the burial chamber downstairs. You just open an iron gate that's on the floor, and you walk down the steps into the burial chamber. So obviously he went down there because it was windy. The wind rattles through the tomb because of the hole at the back and, of course, the gate. So he went down and it was dark and he stumbled and he obviously hit into Mackenzie's coffin. It was the first one you come to right at the bottom of the stairs. Now, as that's fallen off where it was plinth on, it's went through the floor below, which is a wooden floor, and it's dropped down another floor. Now, unfortunately, what's in that bottom floor is the burial crypt of the people who were there before the Mackenzie mausoleum was built. That's the Forrester's family pit. And that's what he fell into, was the remains of that family underneath the Mackenzie tomb with the coffin. And that was the first time the coffin was, as you, you know, and basically touched with, messed with.
God.
So that's when things we think started, you know, that was one of the trigger incidents we figure must have started it.
So, Jamie, you yourself, were you a believer in all this stuff before you worked there? Or is this something that...
Yeah, of course. I mean, because I can't see things like that, it doesn't mean they don't exist, you know, and especially in this job. There is no way you couldn't believe there's some of the things that we have to witness as guides as well, you know. You would never think it would ever happen, or you had just a lot of crap, you know, things to do, it's just a tourist. Nah, until you witnessed somebody being lifted off the floor and thrown against a wall.
No way, have you seen that?
You've got no idea. Yeah, physically lifted about a foot and a half off the ground and thrown back. Sake. Yeah, not in a jump.
Oh, you know, wow.
It rocks up. Some of the things, obviously the burns and the scratches are quite common. Bruise marks on people, or people being knocked out cold, you know, not fainting. People know they're going to faint. You start getting dizzy, you start feeling warm, you need to sit down. You know, a knockout is like the hypnotist has come up and went, sleep. Yeah. You just drop.
Do you think there's any reasoning behind those type of incidents? Do you think there's more people are more open to suggestion? Or do you think it were those instances where people were almost egging on the spirits to act? Because, you know, you'll have these people who say, come on then, do it. Do you think that works, or is it just something that somebody's got about them?
One thing we've learned over the time is it's not a performing monkey. It does what it wants, when it wants, and to whom it wants. You know, it doesn't matter if you're a non-believer or not. If this thing wants to interact with you, you know, it ain't going to hold back and go, wait a minute, you don't believe in me.
A bit like Bill Cosby.
Yeah, there is that.
It's insane. Something jovial and fun, you know, especially in could turn into terrifying in a split second. Mm-hmm. And people missed this over the years, and you know, we've got not all the accounts. A lot of people may not even realize they've been interacted with.
Yeah.
But that's what the whole point was, to document this supernatural case and this paranormal case from the start, which we're still doing.
Wow.
As long as it keeps attacking people, we'll keep taking people in there.
And there was a...
That sounds really fucked up when you say it out loud.
There was the case of also Colin Grant, who was at an exorcism he tried to perform back, I think it was 1999.
That was... Yes, it was. It was October 1999.
Wow.
Because he passed away in November 1999. Yeah. That's right.
And he, so I take it, like, all we know of it is that there was a photographer took a picture of him standing with a Bible and a candle. He said he felt that he'd been followed or latched onto by some sort of evil spirit. He went home and I think he tried to do another seance, and at that point he had a heart attack and died. Is there any more of that night that you guys, any more of that story that you guys know from that night, or anybody that you worked with that was there at that time?
The fact he chose to do this himself because of the reports. Because you got to remember, this was in the newspapers and everyone claiming, and it wasn't three or four people. We're talking 30, 40 people were complaining that they were feeling really uneasy within this area of the graveyard.
Mm-hmm.
So Colin took up to do exorcism, and he couldn't finish it. It was too strong. He had to be carried out of the graveyard.
Wow.
And it was 2 weeks later. Yeah, he was doing a reading for a client, and his last words were, "I have no good news, only bad news," and bang, straight out.
So who was he? Was he a religious person or a psychic or
he was a spiritualist church owner. And he owned a shop in St. Mary Street.
St. Mary Street.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Right, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's one of the things that always kinda irks me a little bit with these stories is how much can you believe what these people say and what they what they believe, and I put believe in inverted commas because there's so many charlatans out there that they just play on what people already think of, and maybe it was just unfortunate. It might have been that he was about to die anyway, and it just so happened that it happened at that time. But there's so many other stories around this this place and this situation that make you think, fuck, maybe something is actually going on there. Can you tell me, other than that small experience of seeing somebody lifted off the ground and thrown against the wall, do you have any more experiences that you can talk about as a tour guide that's been there for a number of years?
There's just that many, you know. It does, as crazy as it sounds, it does become part of the job, you know. So it's just like any other work a day when you've got people getting attacked and things, or freaking out big time, you know. And the scratches are the most weirdest, you know, to actually see these scratches appear on somebody out of nowhere. You know, there's nobody near them and these scratches just appear, and they're not like human scratches, they're like cat scratches, they're welded up. You know, so there's no way somebody within a group of 30 people would be able to move and scratch themselves without anybody noticing. If you're in a situation where you're in a, you know, in the same room, tomb, as the most documented, you know, paranormal case in the world, a poltergeist, if you so much as move an inch, people are on top of you in a second. You know, what the hell are you up to? What are you doing? You know, people will actually move away from somebody, you know, so they're easy to spot because people are on heightened alert. Mm-hmm. You know, so to do it to themselves, no. I know a lot of psychologists have said that, even parapsychologists have come in and said that as well. It could be, you know, the whole pheromones and things, and they don't realize it because they're on heightened that they're actually scratching themselves. No, but other people would notice them do it without a doubt, and they'd be the first to grasp them, you know. Yeah. So, yeah. I don't believe that people can do it to themselves. No. Some people can. Unfortunately, we do get it sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so, fuck. Have you come across that?
We know.
Just going, oh my God, I've been scratched. No, you haven't. You did it yourself.
Like, oh, love. Yeah, no, love. That's a stretch mark, love. That's,
yeah. That when you came. You see, for me, this is what kind of I've always been open to, you know, anything paranormal. Because when I was like, I don't know, I'd say maybe 10 years old, TV sets never used to be flat screen. So you'd have, you know, you remember the TV? It used to be quite chunky, so you could put stuff on the top of it.
Yeah, man.
Well,
I'm 40 years old. I remember a time before TV's, son.
Well, in my grand's house, there was a candle. And like any candle, you know yourself that it's made to sit, and it's quite got some kind of weight to it. Well, it was on top of a TV, and with my own eyes, I saw it, and I saw it get whacked off the TV by nothing, and it literally flew across the room. And I remember from that moment on, and do you know what the strangest thing I felt? Because I was 10, I wasn't actually scared, which for a 10-year-old, it should actually creep the shit out of you. But for me, I felt like, wow.
Absolutely.
I mean, it was more like I was amazed, like I just found something. And from that point in my life, I've always tend to keep everything with an open mind. But which is strange is because when I was younger, my parents and my gran and stuff would always say that anytime these scenarios would happen in that one house, it was always when I was there, which is bizarre. There was a time where I was a bit younger and I described a man, right? And then my gran... herself, she's kind of like she tends to look into all that kind of stuff, and she said, I went in because for years I'd always felt kind of strange kind of stuff. The best way I can describe it, sometimes I feel like a tap running through my body, if that makes any sense. And I went into a clairvoyant store and I spoke to a woman, and she took my hands, and she was like, she said that I had some sort of a healer. I don't know what that is, because I've not actually looked into what that... I've never really followed up with her or anybody else since then. But something to do with healing something. But I find, though, the more I'm open to it, the more weird stuff I'll kind of notice. And one night, I was sleeping, and I woke up. And I don't know if it's sleep paralysis or if it was genuinely there, but there was a dude standing right next to my bed to the point where I screamed like a motherfucker. And my wife as well was like, what? Like, she's never seen me scream ever. Not like that or anything. And do you know what? For me, I just felt, you know what? TVs, you don't see the signal that goes in to the TV, but you see the picture. You know, just because the signal you can't see it doesn't mean it's not there. So I've always kept an open mind to it. And I imagine, so I imagine for your, for you guys, and when you're hiring a tour guide, I mean, does that come with the interview? You know, how do you feel about, you know, technically working with the dead? Because that's what they're doing, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, anytime we do take new guides on, you know, they are told that, you know, you can't really prepare yourself for something like this until you actually witness it. But kind of like, you know, airline staff, you know, we have to be calm at all times, especially during an incident. You know, we have to remain calm because if you've got the guide, you know, dropping it and just running, which has happened, it's just, there's just chaos. And you have unfortunately got health and safety to think about. Yeah. You know, we don't want to stampede to people or anybody getting injured unless the dead do it, you know, because we don't get points for that.
Yeah. So, I mean, how many times have you had somebody who has been like kind of blasé about applying for the jobs? Like, yeah, I can handle this, blah blah blah, and then they get confronted with the situation and then just shit a brick.
Yeah, but no, I think it's twice over the years we've had that happen. You know, you always get the actor types. We've only got two actors that work for the company. You know, the rest of us are just normal people. The good thing about City of the Dead is none of us are scripted. We research everything ourselves and we present it as ourselves. You know, so every tour guide's different, the way we do it, and everything, the way we are. So it's usually actors that think, oh, we can do it, and then something real happens and they just, yeah, their arse falls out, you know. So.
I mean, they say what, there's probably about a million corpses or over, just over a million? Because there's only, how many, was it 45,000 or something that's actually on the book? Is that right?
Yeah, in the Book of Interments, yeah. There's basically, I mean, you've got to think of Greyfriars as a human lasagna. It's layered.
Yeah.
Really layered. Yeah. At least a minimum, I would think, about 750,000.
Bodies. Yeah. Wow. And it's that's
crazy. Crazy, because a lot of people just, but you see people who don't know about this, you see Greyfriars till they think of a cute little dog who just sits on their mask. I remember going when I was very young, my mum to Edinburgh, and she took me to Greyfriars, and I that place has an atmosphere. I couldn't get out quicker.
Yeah. How old were you, Todd?
Ago as well. When I was young, I must have been about 7 or 8. And I'll admit it, I'm a complete chicken shit when it comes to this. I'm fascinated by it, but I don't want to know. I like hearing stories about it, but I don't ever want to witness anything like that. I don't want to be a part of it.
Why?
I don't know
what it makes me. If you believe in it so much, you should want to see it.
I feel I've seen enough and know enough to go, right, that's real, but I don't want to go anywhere closer into it. I know that I got married in Ayr Castle, I've stayed in Ayr Castle overnight, I heard enough that night to know, okay, that's not my imagination, that's all I want to know. I believe everything that people tell me is happening, that's fine, I believe what they tell me, I just don't want to see it for myself. These places have an atmosphere. I went down to the vaults. You, of course, going to the 3 a.m. in the middle of the vaults, that sounds like the worst thing you could ever do to me. I was there with a group guided tour, and the whole time I was telling my wife, I fucking hate you for bringing me down here. This is the worst fucking idea that anybody's had. I want fucking out. I want out. I don't think I've ever swore so much thinking about it. And I came back out, and I've never been so happy to be out of a place in my life. And my wife took a picture of me afterwards because she thought it was so funny how hysterical I was. And after that picture was processed, I'm walking orbs, all these orbs around. And I was always like, fucking no more. And I'll never go back down to the evil. Yeah. Hated it.
See,
I've talked about it for a bit, so yeah. That's my where I am.
I had an overnight investigation of Mary King's Close.
That's
even though nothing actually happened, that to me
certainly there was other people on the not tour. It's not a tour. On other people on the investigation that experienced stuff. I didn't really experience anything, but fuck me, that place has an atmosphere. Especially when you do a normal tour of Mary King's Close, you get to this place called the Chesney House. Obviously, I'm assuming you're familiar with this, Jamie.
Absolutely.
The Chesney House, you're not allowed into it as a tour because it's unstable. That's what they tell you at the door anyway. But on the overnight paranormal investigation, they give you access to this, and holy shit, it does not feel nice. It's like, do you remember when you're a kid and you have to go and visit that relative that nobody likes? That's what it feels like when you walk into the Chesney House. And I don't care what you say, man.
It's the only one.
I mean, places, buildings, rooms, even down to like certain parts of a single room can have a feeling about them that you just think, fuck, I do not want to be here. But as a paranormal investigator, I have to be here. What's the story in regards to what you do as a tour guide? I mean, do you ever do overnight things, or is it purely just, you know, your tours and it's up to 30 people? Or do you ever do kind of private things that go a bit kind of deeper into the night and stuff like that?
I mean, we used to do investigations. The council stopped the graveyard investigations, and we stopped doing vaults investigations a good few years ago now. We want to keep the vaults exclusive as well. I mean, you've got other tour companies that have sections of vaults. You've got Meerkat Tours and Old Reiki Tours. They have their own section of vaults. I believe Old Reiki still do overnight stays, but we like to just keep it as a documentational thing rather than the investigation. It is all down to health and safety now as well, obviously. They aren't the safest place to be the best of times, let alone if, you know, people are tired and, you know, it's dark and you just got flashlights going off and things. You can get some injuries.
I've noticed as well that from some of the documentaries, a lot of them just made with, you know, YouTubers and stuff, that the council are actually really cool on letting people in at night, and probably would allow somebody to stay over if they asked, right? Because I've seen that, and I think as well, your company of the Dead Tours have been, I mean, you've been quite supportive of people going in themselves at night and having a look and, you know, kind of try to figure it out for themselves a little bit.
I mean, the only time we will allow somebody in the prison would be under our guidance, because we're only insured for that as well. They would need to be us, but certainly investigation wise, we always direct people to the council for permission to do it. As far as we're aware, since at least 2005, the council have said no every single time. They just, even to get a TV recording permit and things in graveyards, you have to go through the council for and things like that. It's got to be all paperwork and things like that. But we always direct people if they want to know about investigations, you know, straight on to the council. It's their decision.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They're the landlords.
I remember watching, just recently, I watched one of the videos of an investigation, and it was I don't know how many people were involved in the group, but I could only hear women talking, but I remember this woman called out. She's like, if there's anybody here, if you want to contact us, can you make a sound? And you just hear a blatant human voice going, bastard.
Yeah.
And I'm just thinking, no, that's just a wee dick outside the cemetery just being a fanny. And then she's like, can you make that sound again? And you don't hear bastard again, but it's like bang bang on the door behind them. And she's like, okay, the spirits want us to leave. The problem with these places is that there's a lot of suggestion in it. And that if you want to hear something, you're going to hear it, even if you were just to take a slight step back from it and look at it from an outside point of view. You have to go, oh, that has to be a person, nothing that obvious is going to show up. And that's my, like I said at the start, I do believe, I am a believer in ghosts. Again, I don't know why, but when you see evidence, in inverted commas, as obvious as bastard, you have to question it a little bit and not just go, oh, they want us to leave because they called us bastards. And that kind of thing really gets on my nerves a little bit. I mean, how do you feel about that? I mean, have you ever been in that situation where somebody said, oh, somebody called me a dick?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we get a lot of groups in before. We had a lot of groups sent before, you know, investigation groups, things like that. I mean, if somebody wants to pay for a private tour, what they do with the 2 hours or whatever tour they paid for is entirely up to them. So if they want to stand around in the vaults and with a voice recorder and asking if anybody's there, then if that's the time they've paid for, then they can bloody well do that. You know, it's entirely, that's the good thing with us. We'll be flexible because we do realise there's groups that want to investigate things like that. So we have, you know, in the past had a few shares of them, and some of that's interesting, you know, because I've spent, you know, 11 years researching Southbridge. There's not a lot about Southbridge vaults I don't know. So when people are throwing stuff up like plagues and things like that, you just switch off. It's like, what? Uh-huh. Somebody's channeled Derek Okora here or something like that. You know? Yeah, look at me earrings, Evie. Look at me earrings, eh?
Great. Mary loves dick. Mary loves dick, does she? Dick.
they said that people used to, you know, jump the walls of Greyfriars to bury their loved ones, so that the graves were never, like, you could, I don't even know if still now, but you could still kind of find bones when you're walking the grounds. Is that right?
Well, the problem is because the Greyfriars is indeed like a human lasagna is layered. Yeah, I mean, over time, you know, basically it was just compacted down. So over time, through footwear, through, you know, footfall, through people walking across the grass, people sitting on grass, yeah, when it rains hard, you do get, unfortunately, get the bones coming out of the ground. To this day, yes, it does happen. It's very true. There is protocol in place. Yeah, but, well, our office is right at the gate, the Greyfriars. As soon as you come into the graveyard, that's our office on the right-hand side. Right, so we're right in the gate. So we get handed the bones if the church is not if the church isn't open.
I'm just laughing at Todd's face right now. It just looks like he lost a bit of his soul. just hearing that, it looks like...
I've just got such an admiration for you and your team because it's really, for me, like, people sit like... Kevin and Jordan interviewed a stunt woman who does Hollywood movies and everything. Well, that's a brave job, but for me, what you guys do is like brave beyond like balls of steel, because this is the type of stuff that you could not pay me anything to do.
Why?
I would be constantly on alert. I would be worried about bringing things home with me. I would be worried every minute I was at work. Maybe I'm just a total and utter chicken shit, but... I honestly believe you guys deserve a lot of credit because yous are doing this so that people can have these experiences. But, you know, I think you deserve a lot of credit for the balls that you guys have, really, because that's quite incredible that you've got to deal with stuff like that. And, yeah.
We should be totally clapping for you on a Thursday night, man.
totally, man. 8:15. Right. I want you
all. Do you feel that you've ever taken any kind of spirit or atmosphere home with you? Have you ever gone home and been like, do you know what, something just doesn't feel right, or seen anything in your home now?
I've been married for years. There's an atmosphere every time I come home.
What's wrong with you?
I can't personally. Nothing. No, certainly. I know.
No, seriously, what's wrong with you? Man. Nothing, honestly, nothing. 4 days later, well, there will remember be that time 8 years ago? Oh, fuck. Oh, that's funny.
But certainly, no, we have had reports that people after the tours have had things follow them home. Strange things start happening in their home. It has been reported quite a few times, actually, even as far as America.
Wow.
Holy shit.
They got the plane back.
Yeah. I don't know if it got first class or not, but yeah.
Do you think...
Got to catch the red.
Do you reckon... Do you think maybe it takes a... Like, I don't know if anybody's ever done the research on it, but is it maybe a specific type of person that will have some... Like, there must be, because there must be something attractive to the entity to make them want to latch onto this vessel, so to speak. From just what you've seen, have you found like that it's a certain type of person that these spirits tend to attack? Or I know you said that they'll just go for you if they like it, but have you yourself seen any kind of pattern?
Not the one that I've been able to sell, you know, work out or anything like that. No, I mean, I don't know if we've really. I mean, obviously, we take a general, you know, age, you know, where they're from, what the thing is, you know, whether they believed before or not, you know, there's a set, but I don't know if we've really looked into, you know, patterns like that, so to speak, for types of people, you know, whether it be mental build-up or otherwise, or well, obviously, yeah, because we ask the psychic ability as well, if they ever, you know, felt so, but no, types of people, yeah, that's another one to branch in for statistical purposes.
Do you tend to get a lot of, or have you had a lot of people that, because I've met a few people that are like, I can tell you something about you, like I spoke to a spiritualist who was able to tell me about a conversation I had with someone who is no longer here, and they told me about that conversation only that person and I knew, so I was like, right, either they're really good at reading my mind, or there's genuinely something out there. Do you get a lot of people like that come, and have they ever said to you, oh, by the way, it is George McKenzie, or it's, do you know, I've got someone here, here's their name?
Well, no. I mean, we have had loads of names coming from mediums over time. And we do get, like I said, unfortunately, a lot of false information through sometimes. Mm-hmm. But the one that got me thinking was, we've got a set of metal steps, stairs in the vaults as you go up to the first level from ground level. Once you're inside this metal staircase, now the owner of the vaults, Norrie Rowan, he got it years ago for it to go up. It fitted perfectly. Where it came from, we've got no idea. So anyway, it needed fixed. There was one of the slats had come down, so it needed to get a welder in again. It previously broke as well. So the welder comes in and fixes it, and Norrie comes in and he goes, "My God, that was sitting at the bottom of an ocean for about 20 years." In a shipwreck, and it comes in here and it's needing fixed twice in the space of a year. Wow. Now, that was interesting because 3 months before that, we had had a lady on the tour that couldn't go up the stairs because she felt like she was drowning. Wow. She felt water coming over her, and you know, the vaults leak. So I remember, well, there's never enough water coming in from the roof to drown anybody. So I don't know where that she's getting that from, because we had no idea about the staircase. So how, unless she was really, really good at just guessing, this metal staircase had been under the water, but no, she felt she was drowning, and I looked into the boat, and there was three crew lost their life on that.
Wow.
And from the engine rooms, because they couldn't get out.
See, that's, call it coincidence or just downright paranormal,
well,
right?
Yeah. Well, that's another connection. You know, that staircase itself wasn't haunted. Mm-hmm. That's got nothing to do with the spirits within the vaults, but that has got, you know, something to do with something else, you know, it's yeah. But that has made me really think. It was when Norrie said, God, so it was at the bottom of the ocean, I was like, holy shh, because it came up back instantly of what that woman said.
Mm-hmm.
When did you yourself start getting an interest in the paranormal?
Well, I must have been much younger, years and years before. I can't honestly remember. I've always had an interest in the sort of the occult, like the vampires and stuff like that, ever since watching the Prince of Darkness Hammer film that seriously freaked me out. Yeah. I had nightmares for weeks. But yeah, it was like, yeah. And I just kept reading about ghosts and poltergeists, and it's just always interesting to me.
It seems to be one of these things that unless you're interested in it when you're young, people tend to just dismiss it. A bit like religion, but that's another thing altogether. But I mean, looking at Todd, I'm watching Todd's kind of body language right now, and Like, I know that he's got an interest in it that takes him back to when he was very young. See, I don't have that. Oh my God, I had this experience when I was young. But what I've got is just a, I don't know if it's a hope or a belief that this kind of stuff actually does happen. And I really want to experience that type of thing. And I've tried many a time now. I mean, I was on Most Haunted Live. I don't want to say anything bad about those people, but I will. I've come to discover since being on that show that they're taking the piss. But I've kind of sought out these situations. I put myself in these situations to experience these things, and even to this day, I mean, I'm 30. Fuck, how old am I? I'm 35 years old, and I've still yet to have that definitive experience. Even though I spoke about the scratching earlier, I've still to have that definitive experience to tell me, yeah, this is real. But I still believe. What is it about the paranormal and the ghost phenomena that you think makes people want to believe in it, as opposed to you have to believe? It's not a want. Sorry, because it's not a have to. It's a want. Yeah, you don't know.
It's like Jack the Ripper. That's what's interesting. You'll never be able to find out who it was, no matter what you do. You'll never, ever, ever find out who he was. You know, it's the you just want to. You want. It's just human instinct. You want proof for yourself, to know yourself, to lay it to rest. And if you don't know, you can't find it. You'll keep looking if it interests you. You'll keep looking for that definitive proof, which you'll never find. Yep, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a funny old world, and I think there's a lot about this world that we don't understand, and
a lot.
So much that we're never going to understand, no matter how much we try and kind of pry to get the information from it. But I'm never going to stop looking. I'm never going to stop trying to find that definitive moment in my life that makes me go, I don't care about the fact that I'm going to die, because I know that something else is coming after.
You see, I had that, right? I've had that definitive experience with that candle. The thing is, for me, it's not necessarily now, you know, for you, you're saying you want that definitive experience to know there's something after when you die. For me, it's, I've had that definitive experience. Now I'm just trying to constantly tell myself what are the things that could have been. Like, yeah, I mean, like, could that have been something else? But the more and more I think about it, it was clear as day. There was no one near it. No gust of wind could knock a candle off it. And I have. I would happily, right now, if you said to me, we'll go down the vaults and I'll take you to the most scariest part there is, to the point where everybody that comes in here, I would absolutely go. And I wouldn't go in there frightened, because I'd be more intrigued to what's going to happen. There is that element of, right.
Well, let me know next time you're in Edinburgh. And see when you're all coming into it.
Yeah, absolutely. When lockdown is over, we will definitely come.
Especially you, little man. I won't. You're coming.
Are you not going to come, Todd?
I'm sorry, guys. I can't put myself in that position, but I very much look forward to you guys doing it.
In that position.
Just gaffer tape him up and bring him.
Oh, well. I can't put myself in the position where I'll be attacked by a ghost.
I have one more question for yourself, Jamie. You might not, if you don't know anything about this guy, just let me know, because it's a shot in the dark, right? But there's this book, right? I'm absolutely fascinated with it, by this guy called Tom Robertson, who I think's unfortunately passed away now, who was like Scotland's proclaimed ghost hunter. Have you heard anything about this guy? Or do you know anything about him?
No, actually. Oh, that's unusual. I mean, I've got a lot of literature on obviously Scottish ghosts and things like that over the years. And no, I've not heard of him. I would figure that out.
It's on Amazon. I think he did pass away. It's a lot. To be fair, there's nothing about Edinburgh in here, but it's a lot of stuff around Scotland. So I was just curious if, right, if you have ever. Yeah.
No, so that's a new one. Perfect.
Yeah, because that's a book that kind of really got me more into it and stuff like that. And I think he was a bit of a figure of ridicule, and that's, it really annoys me when these people are made figures of ridicule, because I'm like, you know what? They're much more braver and got more balls than you'll ever know. So that's my opinion on it. But
so when lockdown is over, we should we should come to. I mean, we actually, we do a production as well. We film documentaries, which we're currently doing. So we have all the best cameras, 4K and whatnot, and lighting. We should we should come along and do some sort of, you know, even just a podcast, like what we're doing now, but face-to-face. And we'll do it, if possible, in the graveyard.
Yeah, yeah.
And that'd be pretty interesting. And you know, just...
We'll just go into the prison.
Hey, how cool would that be?
Jamie, how hard, I mean, with regards to that particular environment, trying to get evidence from something that is essentially outdoors has to be really difficult, because there's basically no controls in place. There's so much so much that can be brought from the outside, so many kind of variables and, you know, kind of contamination that can come from the outside. It really makes it difficult to do a paranormal investigation in an outdoor location. What do you think in regards to ways to get around that, or ways to control what evidence we're getting and how you can tell what is real and what is just pish, for want of a bit of expression?
Well, you can wipe out orbs straight away. Any picture with orbs in it, just ditch it. You know, dust. Because it could be, especially in the graveyard, it's all wind, it's dust, it's air, it's water, it's drizzle, it's you've got cigarette smoke, you've got everything, you know, or even people's breath, anything like that could be just completely, you know, not looked in it, because that's 99.999% of the time what it is. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, air pollution, you know, light anomalies and things. But, you know, stuff like the scratches and things like that, I mean, that's got nothing to do with if it's raining or not outside, you know.
So the bruises,
the burn marks and things like that, that's...
Yeah. So we're looking for basically kind of physical contact or physical experience in a situation like that, which is it's literally the cream of the crop. It's the cream of the crop when it comes to paranormal activity is the physical contact. That's what everybody's looking for when it comes to that. So, hey man.
I think people have found it. I've seen videos where people probably have found it, but you're always going to get... I don't think any people will ever accept it. The people who don't believe, there's no argument or anything you could show that will ever convince somebody who doesn't believe. There's got to be real stuff.
We've got no science available.
I mean, if you... Absolutely. With that, so when you saw that fella, I think it was a guy or a woman being lifted and thrown, I mean... What did you do in that scenario? I think, did everybody just scramble and kind of fear for their life kind of thing?
I just pushed through everybody to get to the gate, and I was off. Like, I've got the keys. I don't care about them.
Okay, fuck this! No. I'm out of here.
Struth, mate, fucking this. No, not at all. You know, it was more the fact. I mean, for once. There wasn't mass hysteria. Usually, you know, if somebody freaks out and it's like everybody, it's like a chain reaction.
Yeah.
You know, and then you've got 30 screaming people just because somebody farted next to somebody and they felt a warm wind on their leg or something. But it was weird that nobody freaked out, even though this person had just been launched pretty much across, like, about 8 feet across the vault. People were kind of silent. They were just kind of looking at the person on the ground.
Mackenzie, what you like?
Very, very surreal until I think, funnily enough, the person was actually Australian as well.
What?
Maybe he just doesn't like Australians.
We've sussed it. And do you think yourself that it is George Mackenzie, or do you think maybe that's just people are using that as the face for the goings on?
I we've had no evidence ever to suggest that it's anything to do with George Mackenzie at all. You know, allegedly there was a curse put in place on Mackenzie's body when he was buried, saying his soul would never rest as long as it was in Greyfriars.
Yeah.
How true that is, we don't know, but that is a story from centuries ago.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's just both times his coffin has been desecrated, both times things have heated up in this other tomb within the prison area.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we've still yet to find out that is, you know, anything to do with George Mackenzie, but it has been done to Mackenzie
And he was responsible for, like, what, 1,400 bodies in there in the first technical concentration camp?
Yeah, it was the Covenant Prison is the world's first concentration camp, where 1,200 Covenanters were kept after the Battle of Bothwell Brig. They were kept in the open, you know, that whole area back there was about the size of a football field, big field, and they were kept in there with no shelter, fed the bare minimum. There was over 800 people lost their life within that area of the Covenanters Prison.
Sounds
like Winchborough.
Yeah, talk about a soul not deserving of rest. I suppose George Mackenzie's. I mean, I don't if he's listening.
he's just tuned in there on his dab radio.
No, he's in the airwaves. Right?
My battery's running low. Fuck.
When you go back to work, you'll be like, heard you in the radio.
Get it right. I didn't know.
You were brilliant.
She went up 5 feet before through.
slightly serious note, Jimmy, we'd love the opportunity to kind of take a kind of wander around this place with you, just take the tour and do what we do and make a movie about it. It's something that. It's always interested me, even though I spoke about the scratch. I've had the scratch. Okay. I'm still not 100% there. I'd like to get to that 100%. Todd, I can tell as a believer because he pretty much poops his pants at everything regarding the paranormal. And Kevin is Kevin's had his experiences, and he actually told me about that. Crazy experience with the bald guy next to his bed. It wasn't me, by the way. That day he told me about it the very next day, and it's a terrifying thing. And I think the fear of the unknown, it changes from fear to, you know, just that
curiosity
and wanting to know what the hell is actually going on. Mm-hmm. We'd love the opportunity to take a tour around that place with you, and if you're up for it, and if the council let us do it, then we'd love to do it, man. So that would be you, me, Kevin, Todd, camera guy, Seb. We get them all on board, we do this, and we could have something pretty interesting on our hands. So we'd love to do it, and your input has been great, your story's been good, and if you're up for it, man, let's fucking do it.
Awesome.
Absolutely.
Well, let's do it. Let's get it sorted out, yeah.
Absolutely. So this concludes our episode here on George the Bloody Mackenzie. So you guys can be found on social media at City of the Dead Tours, that's right, yeah?
That's right, yeah.
So I take it you guys...
CityoftheDeadTours.com.
And you guys will be operating again once lockdown's over.
Permission through from the government, yeah. We've been closed down since the 23rd of March, roughly. Okay. So yeah, we're just waiting on the say-so, and then we're ready back up and doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. And then hopefully business will be booming. I mean, I imagine. I was going to make a really bad joke there. Absolutely not going to do it.
That's all right. I'm sure I'll have to fucking listen to it later, so that's fine.
The Edinburgh Festival's being cancelled for the first time in, I think, ever.
The whole thing cancelled? The whole thing's done?
Well,
it's all cancelled, yeah.
Holy shit.
So that's going to...
Which is a shame, but yeah, it's good for us. It could be really good for us. The festival's great, but it hampers sales for the normal businesses of Edinburgh, i.e. walking tours and things like that. So this year it'll be a new experience, to say the least. So fingers crossed we're up and running before then.
Yeah, absolutely. And when we come along as well, the worst thing that can happen the night that we all get together is we'll get a really good podcast. You know, anything above that is going to be even cooler, right?
Yeah, indeed.
Absolutely. Well, thanks very much for coming on the show, Jamie. You're welcome back anytime. And when lockdown's over and you're back on your tours, if anything crazy happens, I want you to give us a bell. You get straight on this podcast and we'll talk about it again in depth. And go right into detail about it, because you know,
this is the thing, Jamie. I mean, normally this podcast, what has been about up until this point has been movies and pop culture and all the kind of shit that surrounds that, but then recently we started taking the turn towards paranormal, which we all fucking love, and we only recently discovered that we all have this kind of this love for that side of things. And if we can get anything out of this lockdown situation, we've already got it. We've already got a good podcast out of it, right? So we've got a good podcast, and if we can get another good podcast and another good video, and just to give some exposure to the craziness that is Edinburgh, not even just your part. Yeah. Edinburgh is crazy when it comes to paranormal stuff. I'm going to say something here. I mean, it's so funny when you hear like American folklore and American stories. They're like, oh, this house dates back to 1965. Oh, does it? I've got a castle that dates back to before Jesus was a spunk, right? So we've got more than you have, and we're going to deal in that, and we're going to tell you about it. And dude, if we can have you on board, then we're on to a winner here. So this has been an absolute blast. I hope to have you on again. Perfect. And please bring us along. Awesome. Let us film it. Speak to the council. Tell them, hey, these guys are sound. And let us do what we do. And we'll do it to the best that we can muster. And this has been a blast, man. Thanks. Thanks for giving us your time. And I hope you can give us a little bit more, and we can do what we're going to do. And fuck yeah, it'll be a blast.
All right, perfect,
fantastic.
Huge thanks to Jamie for giving us his time. And you know, we should absolutely make that happen when lockdown's over. We should go. We should film. I think we should just do a podcast and in the underground. You know, the chambers. A podcast there, right? And, you know, don't even go in there with the intent of being like, you know, let's try and find stuff, you know, three times if you can hear me. No, just go in there and have a podcast about Greyfriars Kirkyard, right? And what happens, happens. If something happens, then, hey, that'll be cool as hell. If it doesn't, then the best thing we got was we done a podcast, we filmed it, and it goes out on all the streaming platforms, and we do a really cool podcast. That's the worst that can happen.
Perfect. I mean, we've got a couple of good 4K cameras that can handle it. And I think whatever we get out of it, whether it be something or nothing, it's going to be fucking class, because you know, are funny.
See if, do you know what would be the funniest thing ever, though? It would turn it from like a horror podcast, a paranormal podcast, to just me going, ah! If we went there, right, and Todd just levitated and started getting swung about the room, I'd be howling.
C-3PO in Return of the Jedi. Yeah. He's in that chair.
I'd just be howling at Todd going, no!
Hey, you have to take a wee step back and think, though. Like, if you were sitting there going, if anybody wants to communicate with us, please, can you lift Todd up and ram his arse against the wall? And then it actually happened. You wouldn't just laugh at it. You wouldn't. You'd go, holy fuck. You would.
I don't know. Like, I take great pleasure in seeing, like, remember when Todd was getting chopped? Like, if something happens, it's usually at great.
Actually, it's very accurate, actually.
If something happens to Todd, I usually find it quite humorous. So that would be quite interesting.
You also usually find that you're the fucking cause of it.
you know me too well. But, I think we should definitely do it. And Todd, you cannot bitch out it. If we get the opportunity to go away, James, and we get to film something in Greyfriars Kirkyard, don't even need to stay there overnight. We just go late, film a podcast, and we leave.
You 100%. Are coming. Look, he's pooping himself already. You are coming.
You have to come.
I'm absolutely pooping myself already.
You are coming. You are coming.
So it's a done deal. So what we'll do is we'll make that happen as soon as lockdown lore is done. In fact, lockdown will be done. Lockdown lore won't be, because that'll be our final episode. Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, so I have been Kevin Wells. J-Mac, as always, big, huge thanks to Todd for coming on. This won't be the last we see of you, especially when we do that episode in Goody Fires Kirk again. It's been great. And make sure you check out our next episode next week. Like us, follow us, share Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all the best places, all the cool stuff. Make sure you go to Truffle Shuffle, use our discount code JibJab to buy all your cool scary horror t-shirts. We're all wearing our cool t-shirts for the time now. Bought that might have, but he used JibJab 15 if he did. So thanks so much, and enjoy the rest of your evening, day, night, wherever you are.